Hello, and welcome to You Will See, a podcast from a foster, adoptive, and biological mom. I'm your host, Maisha Murray. Today we're going to be hearing from a former foster youth who later became a foster parent. In order to share her story, she wants to remain completely anonymous. And to protect her privacy, I will be reading her story to you. She does not want her voice to be heard and recognized. This story is powerful, and it also includes many topics that might trigger some of you. Because of this, I recommend not having your children listen to this. This episode contains themes such as sexual abuse, suicide, self-harm, and many other potentially triggering topics. While it can be hard to hear, I think it's so worth it to hear this story and this perspective. And these are her words. I was removed from my home when I was 10. I didn't understand why I was taken and didn't really find out until I was 18. I still have a lot of questions that will probably never be answered. Things that happened in my home were normal to me. I didn't know it was abnormal to only have expired food. I expected to change homes and live in motels. I saw my mom as a hero because she had the ability to talk people into doing things for her. I didn't think anything was wrong with her breaking down sobbing in public to get free things or to avoid getting evicted. I heard her lie, threaten, beg, and manipulate her way through life since I could remember. I didn't think anything was wrong with her having men over and walking around without clothes on in front of all of us, including the men. It made me feel grossed out, but I didn't think anything of it when I overheard my mom participating in, well, let's just call it adult activities, since you said your son sometimes listens to these podcasts. Kids would tell me I smelled bad, and I didn't believe them because I was used to that smell. I would change schools a lot anyway, so it didn't matter what they thought. I didn't have a lot of friends, probably because my clothes were too small, my hair was never brushed, and they weren't wrong, I probably smelled awful. I also didn't behave well. I acted like my mother. I lied, cheated, begged, cried too much, reacted with violence. My mom hit me with a hanger once because I got called to the principal's office for hitting a boy who called me ugly. One day I came back to our motel after school and saw police cars. I thought my mom had died until I heard her screaming at the top of her lungs at an officer. I ran straight for the police officer and started screaming with her, telling him to let her go. Begging, crying, sobbing, right there at his feet. My baby brother, who was about 18 months at the time, sat screaming in the doorway while some lady kept trying to play with him. "Don't touch him," I yelled, and I picked him up. I looked back at my mom and saw they were putting her into a police car. I started making a plan. I was going to wait for everyone to leave. I was going to figure out a plan for my siblings and I. The owner of the motel would let us stay, I knew it. And mommy would be back when her boyfriend at the time got her out of jail. I thought her boyfriend was rich because he had a newer car and wore chains. He bought mommy a lot of jewelry. I can't really remember much other than that. The lady trying to stop my brother from crying said I would have to go with her, and I remember telling her we would be fine and not to bother with us. She said we had to have adults to watch us. I threw a pretty big fit, but it didn't matter what I did. I never saw that motel again, and some of my stuff got left there, since it probably looked like garbage. Stuff was important to me, though. I had been saving a Pop-Tart I found, and I kept it hidden from my siblings. I was hoping to eat it when they slept. I wanted that Pop-Tart and was mad that they wouldn't let me go get it. My first foster home was pretty good, but it was never as good as my old life in my mind. I never realized what I had, and I ruined it. I thought if no one would take us, they would have to give us back to mommy. There weren't any other kids in our first home. Our foster parents were older, and I knew I hated the dad right from the start because he was a man, and all the other men I had ever known hurt my mom in some way or another. I was sure they were rich. They had two cars and a house with a few rooms. I shared a room with my sister, but I got my own bed and dresser. They gave me all kinds of toys. I had a Cabbage Patch Kid and brought it to school, and all the other kids thought it was amazing. I thought it was weird that they wanted me to take a bath every day. I thought it was dumb, and I hated it when the mom brushed my hair because it hurt to get all the tangles out. I had lice, and so did my siblings, and trying to get that out took forever. They had way too much food. They bought Pop-Tarts once, so I took the box and hid it in my room. I never ate those Pop-Tarts either. I fought with my siblings more in that house. We fought over toys. We fought over clothes. My sister got mean for no reason. She was always getting in trouble. They took her away when she set her room on fire because they told her she needed to keep it clean. We met with her at parks sometimes. Eventually, we stopped meeting. They gave me more stuff than I ever thought I'd have. I got in trouble sometimes because I didn't understand why they needed so many rules. They wanted us to take our shoes off at the door, and I forgot once. I had been playing outside in the mud and came running through the house with muddy feet. Foster Dad saw me and said, "Hey, take off your shoes at the door." There really wasn't anything wrong with what he said, but I felt instant fear, and instead of crying, which is what I felt like doing, I wiped the mud on my hand from my shoe and smeared it all over the curtains. I heard Foster Dad talking loudly how he didn't want to keep doing this, and he wanted me to go. So I ran away. I didn't run because I didn't want to be there. I ran away to try to punish my foster dad for saying that about me. I knew I wouldn't really get anywhere. I wanted them to pity me. It was a manipulation just like my mom had used to get things to go her way, especially to get men to do what she wanted. When they found me, I waited until foster dad showed up and yelled loudly and cried that he said he didn't want me. I knew there were neighbors out watching the whole thing happen, and I wanted them to think he was awful. I yelled that he was making me clean the whole house, and if I did anything wrong at all, he would yell at me. Then I hid my face and fake cried loudly and dramatically, hoping everyone saw the poor foster girl with an awful foster dad. That would teach him. I don't know why, but after that, it became my mission to just blow everything up. I pushed buttons, and I was good at it. If they asked me to do something, I said no. Everything was no. I broke my toys, ate what I wanted, and ignored all the rules. I made my foster mom cry all the time, and when she told me what to do, I insulted her. The final straw was when I knew a caseworker was coming to see me. I purposely slammed my head into a wall to make a bruise on my face. I had a whole plan. When she came, I walked in with real but fake tears flowing down my face and said, "Foster Dad is always mad at me. He hit my face when I told him no." And I broke into what started as fake but turned into very real tears. I don't know what I was feeling. I just remember letting myself feel all of the awful things that I had been avoiding for months since I had been in that home. Foster Dad, of course, denied he did anything. I assume now they were investigated, but the worker took me and my brothers with her that day. We never went back. I told the caseworker years later it wasn't true. I really don't know why I thought it was such a good plan. It made things a lot worse. They decided to separate us because I was 11 by then, and most families didn't want to take an 11-year-old girl. My brothers got to stay together. I went by myself to another home. In this home, the mom was the boss and the dad did pretty much nothing except go to work, come home, and go to his room. Fostering was her thing. If I asked Foster Dad anything, the answer was, "Ask Mom." I was only there for a little while. Anger at myself and everyone else had built up so strongly. I broke into Foster Dad's liquor cabinet and drank or smashed all of the alcohol. He was a weak link and I broke him quickly. They decided I didn't like men and moved me to a home with a single mom. This started out as my favorite home. She always did fun stuff with me. She took me places and bought me new clothes. She bought me my first bra, and I should have realized something was wrong, but I was blissfully ignorant to the fact that she was buying me lingerie. She dyed my hair and did my nails. She took a lot of time to build my trust. One day she told me a doctor was going to come see me in her house. She talked it up like it was a big deal. This doctor was a specialist who was going to make me feel good. When the doctor showed up, I realized quickly it wasn't a doctor at all. He brought me some treats and told me if I was a good girl, I would get more. He asked to see where my room was. I showed him, feeling uneasy, but not understanding why. That was the first of Foster Mom's customers. They would come by every week or two, all saying they were doctors. They would go with me to my room and do things with me that I did not like. I was scared, and when I told Foster Mom what the first man did, she told me to never talk about it with anyone if I ever wanted to see my siblings again. She slapped me hard once and said no one would believe me because it said in my file that I had made false accusations before. My life was still not terrible in that home. I was rewarded for not telling, and I learned quickly that if I wanted to survive, I would go on acting as if everything was normal until another man came. It felt like I was a different person when they were there. I was good at my job. I read the men and learned to perceive what they would want. I was in that home for 2 years. I probably would have been there forever, but I was lucky. One of the frequent customers got caught, and an investigation revealed he had been abusing several girls and distributing pictures of them to other men. They figured out what was going on with me because my picture was included. I still don't know how many people saw those pictures and exactly what was in them. The man who got caught made a deal and told on foster mom. She went to jail. My reaction was weird. I did not want to go. I cried and begged for them not to take her the same way I did for mommy. I told them she wouldn't do it again and that she was sorry. I even told them I chose to do those things with those men. I told the caseworker I wasn't going to testify in court about what had happened to me. I also refused for a while to get into the car to be taken to a new home. That caseworker was decent and let me take my time as I walked around the house to find all my stuff. She left me alone to pack my clothes, and I let myself cry while she wasn't looking. I was still reluctant to get into the car, but I complied because she pretended not to notice that I had been crying. I was moved to another home. I couldn't handle it. It was like I was in denial, and I wanted things to change so badly, but I couldn't do anything about it. I thought I had all this power, and I thought if I fought hard enough, something would be normal again. This is when I started hurting myself. I couldn't make sense of everything that had happened. I got moved again because that family couldn't deal with someone who self-harms. After that, I was bounced from home to home. I honestly don't blame them for saying they couldn't keep me. As a foster parent, I don't know if I could have handled me either. It honestly still scares me, the idea of getting a child that could hurt themselves or potentially commit suicide. At the time, I was hell-bent on messing everything up. I was so angry, and no one understood, not even me. I don't even know what I was trying to get. I didn't feel like a real person, and I don't think angry was a word I associated with who I am, but that's how everyone saw me. When I was angry, I wasn't me, but I couldn't remember who I was anyway. See how hard it is to even explain? I just hated living. I wanted to be in control of my life and had no power or skills to get there. I didn't even have the power to end my life. I had to accept the rejection every time I was moved because what else was I going to do? I know people were trying so hard to help me. Looking back, I don't think I was fully aware of how much other people tried to care. My own anger was too distracting to have time for empathy or to really notice people around me. I had a strong desire to control people around me, and I was a skilled manipulator. I could use the "I'm a poor foster kid" line to get free stuff all the time. People bent over backwards for me, and it fed this power-seeking monster inside me. I thought of them as chumps and never really appreciated them. I lied all the time. And it was funny, but not funny, because I used to make up sad stories about my life, like saying that my parents died in a car accident and that's why I was in foster care. I had plenty of awful experiences that were true, but I never used those to manipulate people. I used lies. Sometimes I even started believing my lies. I used them to get things I wanted. Like when my foster parents wanted me to do chores, I created this scenario in my head where they were starving me and keeping all the money for themselves and using me as a slave. The closest thing to this was one home where they never bought treats or sugar. They also rarely ate meat. I truly thought they were starving me because they wouldn't ever go out to get fast food. As a kid, I didn't know all their healthy organic food that I often wasted or fed to the dog was probably twice as expensive as the foods I had become accustomed to. There were lots of reasons I was kicked out of homes. I ran away a lot. I punched some holes in some walls. I cursed at teachers and adults. I got in fights at school. I drank alcohol and smoked marijuana. I flirted with adult men and got one arrested. I had lots of boyfriends that I snuck out to see or snuck into the house. I really didn't care about myself. I was just trying to find the next thing to distract me from my anger and pain. I hated therapy and didn't want to talk about what happened. I ended up getting therapy as an adult, and when I was there by my choice, it made a huge difference. As you can see, I'm pretty open about things now. But being forced to talk to a complete stranger sucked. I was assigned to a man therapist for a long time in one of the homes. I asked for a female, and they said there weren't any available. Let's just lock a sexual abuse victim in a room with a man for an hour a week. That's a good idea. I threw my shoe at his head after a few sessions, and they decided they would actually listen to me and get me a female therapist. Nothing really changed for me, except I might have been getting worse over the next few years. I was put into a group home at 16, and that's when things actually started to change for the better. I hated being in a group home, and there were lots of bad things about it. I was always nervous about getting a new roommate, and the workers there would quit from being burnt out, so it was more of inconsistent adults. I did okay there because there was structure. I understood what the rules were and what would happen if I didn't follow them. I was allowed to make lots of choices when I proved I could make good choices. The consistency was something I could rely on. I was assigned a mentor, and that is what made the biggest difference. I am still in contact with her today. She has been my truest and most consistent ally in my life so far. She became a mentor for college credit, but I knew it wasn't just a job to her. She really did want to be there for me. She was pretty much the opposite of me, but she had experienced sexual abuse, so she understood some things. She was good at bluntly putting things out there for me to think about. She wasn't trying to control me. She was trying to knock some sense into me. I tried to hit her once, and that's how I found out she was a black belt in jiu-jitsu or some kind of ninja crap. I never tried that again. I started to listen, and what she was saying made sense. She made me realize I can still have dreams and hopes. She helped me understand I could decide who I want to be. She never felt sorry for me, and she always thought I could do more. I often think of her as my mom, even though she's only about 5 years older than me. She always made an effort to come see me, and she still visits with her family. I was placed into a foster home who was interested in adopting me when I was 17. I aged out before they could adopt, but I lived with them until I was 21. There was still a lot of anger and confusion in my mind. I had not become perfect, but I was starting to see a lot more logic in my actions. That family was really nice, and the couple was cute. They were always doing romantic things for each other. They ran their home a lot how I wanted to do things, if I ever had a family. It was there that I realized I wanted to have a family someday. I wanted to help people, so they wouldn't have to feel like me. I got my GED and went to work as a cashier at a grocery store. They had a college tuition program that allowed me to attend college. I failed miserably the first three attempts. When I was about 25, I tried again, and this time I passed. I didn't have the best grades, but I passed. I was about 27 when I finally felt like a real adult. I stopped drinking and wasting all my money. I lived in a consistent apartment and found a steady boyfriend. Relationships were always hard for me, but for some reason this guy just would not give up, so I married him. I found out a little while later that I couldn't have kids. A few years later, my husband and I started the process to become foster parents. By this time, I had earned a bachelor's degree and was working for an airline company. My husband was a physical therapist. We were both pretty successful adults, so we bought a home with lots of rooms and started fostering. That was about 10 years ago, and since then, we have had around 50 or so kids come through our home. We have adopted 8 of those kids. Growing up in the system has given me an advantage in many ways. I can see the anger in these kids the way I had it, but I can see the kids behind the anger even more. My main job as a foster parent is to help them find it. I have never fostered a bad kid. Some of them likely won't ever figure it out. It took me 27 years to learn to care about others and be a productive member of society. I don't expect them to figure it out in 2 to 3 years while they are here, or however long they have with us. I learned how to handle being triggered as a foster parent. I feel a lot of things that normal people don't feel. It can be something as simple as how a kid phrases something that can make me feel scared or angry, and I have to learn to identify and control those feelings. I recently got my master's degree, and I have had a few promotions in my career, but despite all that success, I think fostering is my real work in life. The things that helped me become a successful person now were therapy, but out of my own choice. My mentor mom, as I call her, and God. My mentor is the one who introduced me to God and our Savior. I always thought of Christianity as more rules, but she helped me to see that God is loving and logical. Jesus truly does save us. I try to let my foster kids figure that one out on their own, because I know if anyone had ever tried to force me into believing that God was real, I would have run in the opposite direction. I had some rough years as an adult where I needed help, and it was ministries that kept me alive. They helped pay for therapy I desperately needed. As a foster parent, I now help run a fostering ministry in which we collect donations and serve the fostering community. We help recruit good families to foster and find people who are willing to become a CASA GAL, or a mentor. We also provide discounted sports programs to foster families. I've seen how sports and hobbies can really help these kids firsthand. I wish I would have been more involved in something like that when I was a kid. Most people from church or the community support foster parents by bringing meals when they have a new placement. Anyone could help in some way or another. Some things I want foster parents to know now that I've been both raised as a foster child and have been a foster parent. I was pretty self-absorbed as a foster youth, and my behaviors were never a reflection of my foster parents' ability to parent. Now I see how hard it is to parent, and there's no one-size-fits-all answer. Also, I really don't know if any of the adults in my life really could have taught me anything until I started letting them. I just wasn't ready to hear things. That doesn't mean that what they did for me was pointless, though. I picked up at least a few valuable things from every home I was in, but I really am grateful to their efforts. It's not easy being a foster parent. I've been there and I still can't get through to some of these kids. Foster kids still need you, even if they are unaware of how much you care or how much of yourself you're putting into it. I always preferred homes to a group home. I don't think kids should be raised in a prison unless they have to be. I probably needed it, but there are kids there now who would do fine in a patient loving home. If there were more good homes out there, I might not have ever been placed in the home where I was abused. If there were more people stepping up, the system wouldn't be so overcrowded that kids get overlooked. I agree with a lot of what Maisha has said online about finding the root causes and contributing to society before kids need to be taken. I came on this podcast because I've seen how Maisha has done her research and tries to think things through while also really listening to former foster youth. Please share my story so I know I didn't write this all out for nothing. We need to find people who are willing to be selfless and take in a kid who is like me. Despite everything I went through, by the end of my childhood, I did find a great home with people who loved me. Someone might need you to provide that home. Really ask yourself, could that be you? Could you help even just one kid? Please share this when it comes out so people can understand why this cause is so important. Please just do something. There is a way that you can help. Go out, figure out what it is, and go contribute. I'm so thankful for this person that shared this story with me. I'm so glad that she was able to open up about her perspective in foster care. There are so many stories out there that are like this. And hopefully so many stories out there that are not like this. Stories where children find homes that fit them well and that can help them. We have so many more resources now, so many more psychological studies, and maybe none of that will help. Maybe it's kind of like what she said, she just wasn't ready to absorb it. She wasn't ready to learn yet. But she also said that none of it was pointless. She learned something. She was still able to take in something in each home that she was in. And maybe us as foster parents to some of these kids were just transition homes. Maybe they need a home to blow up in first so that they can get things out and feel what they need to feel so that they can move on and find a family or whatever it is that they need to find in life. We can provide those homes. I know that I have the power to do that. It was not a convenient time for me at all to start fostering. I was going to school full time. I had a job in my church in which I was over the children and their teachers and all of their leaders. It was almost basically another part-time job. And my husband was military and gone all the time, and we already had these two small children. My life was chaotic. I could have said, I'm too busy. I can't do this. But I could. And I did. And I've never been a perfect parent, but I know that I have something that I can give. At the very least, I can offer these kids love that they might not even feel, but I can still offer it. There are other things that you can do. She mentions being a CASA, that's C-A-S-A. You can look that up. Basically, you are the child's contact with the system. You go and you meet the children, you find out what their needs are. You're an advocate for them. A GAL is a guardian ad litem. And they have other responsibilities to advocate in court for children. I don't think I even met our first foster son's CASA. I don't know if he even actually had one. I don't know if he was ever assigned one. But these kids need a CASA because they need someone that can come and see them, see how they're doing. Those checks help to avoid homes in which children can be abused. It's a check and a balance so that these kids can remain safe. Because there are, unfortunately, homes out there that are not safe. There are so many other things that you can do. Bring a foster parent a meal. Do you know how many days I just ended up getting Little Caesars or some kind of fast food? We were not a fast food family. And then we started fostering, and at least 3 times a week we were eating fast food because life got so hectic. It is wonderful when someone brings me a meal when I have a new placement so I can focus on them, get them integrated into my home. It can be stressful. It's also great when people are aware of what's going on and they can come and talk to me. I just need friends sometimes. And most of my friends don't even understand what's going on, and that's okay. I just sometimes need support from somebody who can just sit there and listen. They don't have to offer advice. They don't have to do anything besides sit there and listen. And sometimes I can't even explain what's going on because it's private or because it has to do with a case and we're not supposed to discuss information for ongoing cases. So sometimes I just need someone where I can just sit there and maybe cry and they can just understand that I'm not crazy. And then she talks at the end about finding the root causes. We as a society need to figure out why this is happening. And a lot of it has to do with drugs. We need to find a solution to stop drug addiction. It impacts the family so much. But also, people need friends. People need someone to support them. Who in your community can you reach out to? Who do you see that might be overwhelmed? There's got to be somebody that you can reach out to and check in on. We can serve each other in our community. How much better would the world be if we were aware of who our neighbors were and how we can help them? How much better of a community would we be if we could find those who were struggling? Not everyone can afford therapy. Not everyone has the resources out there that they need. Life can get hard. I just read a story about a single mom the other day where she is a mom of a teenager with mental illness who cannot be left alone basically ever. And she is a single mom. She cannot go to work because if she goes to work, her child could get into some serious trouble. So if she can't work and her child is suffering from mental illness, what is she supposed to do? And there are solutions to that, and there's programs and things that she can do. But some people don't even know that that's out there, and different states have different laws. So in some cases, it's not available. How can we help them? How can we as a community help them? Why are we relying solely on the government to fix all of our problems? Look at your next door neighbor. Do they need you? If everybody watches out for somebody else in this world, we'd all be covered. And I will probably go into that later on. For now, I just wanted to put that out there. There's someone out there who needs you. Maybe it's not even involved in this foster care system. I think society in general would just be a lot better if we could figure out who needs us and how we can serve. I think one of the most powerful things about this story is that she was still able to succeed. And I think sometimes we kind of deem these kids that punch holes in walls and that steal things, steal cars, steal money, that yell at their foster parents, tell them they hate them. We deem them as hopeless. We deem them as bad kids. And like she said, she's never had a bad foster kid. I think that's so important to recognize. None of them are bad kids. They are distracted by their anger, which is consuming them. We need to give these kids a chance. And in order to give them a chance, they need homes. After everything that she had been through, she was never hopeless. And now she is a powerful advocate. She's always helping, always doing things for other people. She has taken in so many kids and helped them along in their journey. Even though I'm sure it's hard for her. She talks about being triggered by them. I'm sure that's not comfortable. This is not a comfortable journey. Being a foster parent is not comfortable, but it's possible. And these kids deserve our hope for them. They deserve to be recognized for who they really are outside of their anger. I hope that this struck you as powerful as it did for me. I hope that this inspires you to reach out to help in some way or another. Please consider looking into things. Become a CASA. Become a GAL. Become a caseworker. Do something. Become a mentor. She talked heavily about how this mentor changed her life because she was truly invested, not because she was being paid to be there or because I don't think mentors do get payment of any kind, but she was there for college credit, but she continued to follow her throughout her life and they still meet up together. Can you become involved in that way? Can you see the potential in a child and become a mentor? There are so many ways that you can help. Thank you for listening this week. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it. Like she was saying, she wants her story to be out there. She doesn't want anybody to know who she is, but she wants the story to be out there so that she can help and contribute. So if you thought that this story was powerful and you enjoyed this episode, please share it. Thank you for all those who have shown their support so far, and tune in next week to You Will See.